You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Hello, and welcome to our unique Corner House weekly podcast. I'm Sarah Perks, Programme and Engagement Director, and I'm joined by my regular contributor, the extremely well-informed Andy Willis of Salford University. We've opened our major new exhibition, New Cartographies, Algeria, France, UK, to audience and critical acclaim. Already been covered by press from the Manchester Evening News to the BBC World Service. Later you'll hear from another of the exhibition artists involved, John Perivalaris, and we'll find out what you thought of our opening event in the galleries. We'll also take a look at this week's new film releases, give you a mini What's On guide, and let you in on our staff recommendation of the week, and not forgetting the now extremely legendary Quickfire Film Round. This week, we've got two new releases in our cinemas. They are the French film Little White Lies and an indie-American western Meeks Cut Off. First up, Little White Lies. It was one of the biggest French films of last year, a really big summer blockbuster in France. It's directed by Guillaume Canet, and it's full of French stars from Marion Cotillard to François Cluzet and lots of others. It's about a group of friends, and at the beginning, something quite devastating happens to the group, and then they have to make the call whether they're going to go on their usual summer holiday. And it's also about the different characters within the group. Marianne plays a kind of pot-smoking, freewheeling kind of hippie character, and it's about how over that summer, over that period of time, how it all develops. Okay, so Andy, you've not actually seen Little White Lies, whereas I have. What's attracting you to it at the moment?
Well, it strikes me as maybe it's a bit of a French Robert Altman-style film. Lots of stars, lots of different parts, lots of intermingling stories. And I usually quite find those sorts of films quite engaging, because if one of the strands isn't something you're enjoying, then you maybe hook onto one of the other strands. So you get annoyed by one character, but you like another character. So yeah, I tend to like those kind of lazy, long, unfolding, multi-character stories.
Yeah, definitely. About anyone who has a group of friends, especially if you do have those kind of group holidays as well, which of course has politics all of their own. And I think it's really one for the French film fans. It's a real French star fest. It's got someone for everyone, and they're really engaging, and they, for me, are what really carries the film. The director, his previous film called Tell No One, you might remember, was a really taut, really amazing thriller that I think is one of the best kind of films to come out of France recently. This time, I think he's been a little overindulgent. You know, it's a very long film, and he does kind of, you know, maybe a little bit selfish filmmaking in a sense. Obviously, the lead actress is his girlfriend as well, and we should point that out. But having said that, it's still a good, sturdy job. It was a big hit in France. I think it was the biggest grossing film last year, so that obviously speaks volumes. Okay, our second film this week is Meeks Cut Off. Andy, tell us what's it about.
Meeks Cut Off is a Western directed by Kelly Reinhart, and there's two clues there. One is it's a Western. Now, if you're a big fan of Westerns with driving stories and lots of action, it's not for you. But if you like kind of Kelly Reinhart, who directed Wendy and Lucy in Old Joy, that kind of quite spare, pared-back, indie-style American films, it's very much like her other films. It's a very interesting take on the Western, I felt. It uses a lot of kind of realism to recreate what it must have been like trekking across the kind of arid wilderness. It's one of those films, though, which we've had on the podcast quite often, where you can't really say too much. But I found it really quite mesmerising and quite engaging. I'm not sure you felt the same, did you?
It was just, I mean, I don't mind slow films, but the pace was not there for me. And I don't know, it looked great as well. And Michelle Williams was really good in it, but it just sort of lacked something for me. But then, there you go, this week I'm just being really honest. But I'm quite interested in the idea of offbeat westerns. Andy, I'm sure you have a very quick history of those for us.
Well, maybe not a history, because the Western genre is so big and it's gone down so many trails. Do you see what I did then? Then there's lots and lots of offbeat Westerns. So just looking over the history of the Western, I've picked out three kind of offbeat trends within the Western which I've really enjoyed over the years, and which I think in some ways Meeks Cut Off may have some links with. The first lot, well, maybe there's not so many links with this one, but the first one in terms of offbeat was the series of Westerns that were made in East Germany in the 1960s and into the early 1970s, which took the popular genre but kind of turned it on its head, trying to make socialist Westerns by having the Native Americans as the good guys and the people who were settling the West and bringing industry country and capitalism were the bad guys, because of course capitalism was a good thing for the people in the communist countries. So that would be my first kind of trend of offbeat westerns, the red East westerns. My second trend of offbeat westerns is something I'm sure everyone's familiar with, which is spaghetti westerns. Now, there were so many Italian and Spanish co-productions made in the 1960s and 1970s that they went to some crazy lengths with some of the things that they included on them, and offbeat would be a great term for those sorts of films. So if you take something like Django from the mid-60s, where Franco Nero's walking around with a coffin, with a Gatling gun in that coffin, and shooting everyone as he goes, you know, you think, who the hell came up with these ideas? They're crazy. And another one, again, by the same director of Django, Sergio Cabuccio, which is a favourite of mine, is called The Great Silence, which has Klaus Kinski as a crazed sort of bounty hunter using the guise of law and order to basically just kill everyone he meets. And it's got some incredible bleak snow landscapes. And I think the landscape thing with The Great Silence is one of the things that links it with Meek's Cut Off. However, the trend of offbeat westerns, which I think most links with Meek's Cut Off for me, is a couple of westerns that Monty Hellman, the kind of maverick American director, made in the 1960s, called The Shooting and Ride the Whirlwind, which he made with Jack Nicholson and people like Warren Oates, Harry Dean Stanton, some great sort of figures from the American western cinema of the 60s. And they're really kind of almost existential westerns, where the thing with Meek's Cut Off and The Shooting is, Warren Oates is hired to take a woman across the desert. As they go across the desert, they run out of water, their horses die, they all start getting slightly delirious, they've been followed by this guy, and it all becomes a kind of inward-looking existential nightmare, really. I think it was Jonathan Rosenbaum who gave them the term acid westerns, and it seems very, very much a term that's in line with them. So there could be lots of other things you could pick for this offbeat western idea, but that's just three that I remember that really sort of hit it off for me.
Great. So who do you think should come and see Meek's Cut Off this weekend?
I think Meek's Cut Off's a film that will appeal to people who like art films. It's a proper American indie art cinema piece. Very, very thought-provoking, very intense, and I found it very engaging, unlike yourself.
Okay, and you've also brought us a film obituary this week.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the weekend I was very sad to hear that Sidney Lumet had died. I mean, Sidney Lumet, for me, was one of the great figures of American cinema of the 50s, 60s and 70s. He carried on working into the 80s and 90s, but I think his best work was in the 1960s and 70s. I think because he worked with so many great actors and was often seen as a director who got great performances out of actors, he was often overlooked. So all the plaudits went to the actors in many of the films he directed, and people forgot the films that he made. He began working in the theatre and then working in television in the golden age of American television in the 1950s. Then he moved on into the cinema, initially making the film 12 Angry Men, which I'm sure many, many people have seen, which is one of those films with great performances from particularly Henry Fonda. And that kind of marked his career, doing a lot of very serious drama, a lot of theatrical adaptations. He forged some really strong relationships with certain actors as well. For one, Sean Connery. He was the director of a lesser-known Sean Connery film, The Offence, which is Sean Connery's favourite film. But I just picked out some of his films across his career, and that gives you a sense of the kind of director he was. And what a shame it is that we don't really know Sidney Lumet's name more so. He directed The Pawnbroker in 1964, which has probably got Rod Steiger's best ever performance in it. Then, as I say, he worked with Sean Connery on a number of films. When you get to the 1970s, if I just list the films that he directed, you start to think, wow, he's a real player in American cinema of the 1970s. In 1973, he directed Serpico, the famous Al Pacino film. Then he directed Murder on the Orient Express, which was one of the highest grossing films of the 70s, with Albert Finney as Hercule Poirot. Then he made Dog Day Afternoon, again, which many people will be familiar with because of Al Pacino's performance in 75. Then The Great Network, about the collapse of people working in television. And then Eccles, the adaptation of Peter Schaeffer's play in 77. So that run of films that he was making, one a year in the 70s, when you look at the films he's made, you think, blimey, he's some filmmaker. He had a real interest in law and in justice. I mentioned The Offence and Serpico, but he also made another film people might remember called Prince of the City, which has a standout performance in it by Treat Williams. Then he made The Verdict, which Paul Newman was nominated for an Oscar for in 82. Then he made a film called Daniel with Timothy Hutton in 83, which is about the Rosenbergs, who were executed in America for selling secrets to the Soviet Union. And then in 1990, he made Q&A, which again has got a fantastic performance by Nick Nolte in it. They're all interested in law, justice and the police. So he's a director, really, as I say. People overlook him because of all those great performances, but he himself was a fantastic contributor to world cinema.
OK, I think you made a very strong case there, and I agree we can put him into the Film Hall of Fame. So both Little White Lies and Meek's Cut Off start screening from this Friday, the 15th of April. All the times are on our website. Remember, you can buy the tickets online with no extra booking fee.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
Last week, we opened our current major exhibition, New Cartographies, across all three galleries. It's all about the relationships between Algeria, France and the UK, and it's 10 artists in the show through photography and video and installation. It's well worth a look. But again, you don't have to take my word on it. Let's hear from the people who came to our very well-attended preview last week.
I think it looks amazing, like the way they've done the gallery this time. It looks particularly sort of complex as a setup, so I think they've done a really good job with that. And the work's really interesting. Yeah, I didn't know too much about what the show was going to be before I came down, so it was kind of a bit of a suck it and see thing. I really like this this idea of kind of transition and movement of people. I think it's a really interesting thing to try and map, and the way that they've done it kind of conveys that sort of human side of it, really. And yeah, it's working really well.
I find the layout really pleasing and the whole exhibition extremely interesting. And what I was particularly interested in was what happened to the women after their activity during the Algerian Revolution.
So far, I think this map is definitely the best work of all. It's really really informative and really really creative, the way he's put everything together, and the other vocabulary is very well chosen as well.
I thought it was really good. It's the first time I came up to the galleries in Corner House. I thought it was very interesting. I learned new things about Algeria.
It just strikes me as a stunning exhibition. You know, clearly the amount of work that's gone into it, the conceptualization of it is brilliant, and the diversity of the work is extremely impressive.
So thanks to those of you that spoke to us last Thursday evening and shared your thoughts on the exhibition. It's really important that we get your feedback and we really appreciate it. Don't forget you can continue to let us know what you feel about the exhibition. You can write in the book, in the gallery, you can email us, tweet, whichever medium you prefer. Okay, it's time for our quickfire round. Okay, I'm going to ask Andy these very quickly. Your favourite offbeat Western?
I think maybe Dead Man, the Jim Jarmusch film.
Ah, good choice. I'm going to have a Thai film called Tears of the Black Tiger. That must be, oh gosh, about 10 years old. Really exciting film. Very, very crazy. Okay, Andy, what's your best film that is 1 hour too long?
Well, 1 hour too long. Normally, I quite like these sort of long films, but I remember during the Ann Festival, there was that incredibly long Alexander Kluge film about Das Kapital. I didn't see it, but I bet you could have cut an hour out of it.
It was 10 hours long, so I think an hour would have been appreciated. What's your best Sidney Lumet film?
Well, perhaps his most offbeat, as we've talked about offbeat today as well, film is The Wiz.
Okay, I'm going to have Dog Day Afternoon. What's your best group of friends film?
Oh, for me, it's always The Return of the Secaucus 7, the John Sayles film, which was basically ripped off by Lawrence Kasdan for The Big Chill.
And I'm going to cop out and have Peter's Friends. I actually don't remember much about it, but I'm sure I enjoyed it at the time.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Now back to New Cartographies. Last week in the podcast, we heard from Zeneb Sadira about her UK premiere, her video installation in Gallery 3. This week, it's the turn of another artist, John Perivolaris. Our programme coordinator, Christina, caught up with John earlier in the week.
For those who haven't been to the exhibition, could you tell us a bit about North to North and the multimedia installation that's here in Gallery 1?
North to North is basically a one-month journey from Manchester to Algiers, travelling down through France, travelling by ship, train mostly, and that's it. So basically over a month, I took photographs, did a few videos, sent quite a few postcards and received quite a few postcards, because postcards are quite important in my installation.
Was this a very kind of new journey for you? Had you been to any of these countries before?
In a way, yes. I'd never been to Algeria before, but the journey had a very personal dimension, funnily enough, which decided the places I would visit in Algeria, in that I was repeating a journey my father had done in the early 50s as a Greek sailor. They used to stop off for months in what was then called Bone and is now Annaba. And Annaba was the one place I went to outside of Algiers, and it's about 300 kilometers from Tunisian border. It had a sort of sentimental aspect to it as well.
And you start your journey at a specific table in the Corner House Cafe. How important were these specific locations on your journey?
Location was everything. I mean, the idea of place and being displaced and moving from place to place, trying to find a place, not finding it, getting lost, was immensely important. So the point of departure, I thought, was extremely important. And I shot a Polaroid through the window by that table onto the street outside, which is part of the exhibition. And I stuck the Polaroid onto a page from the A to Z of Manchester, an old edition, on the exact location to mark the spot. It was the only point in the journey where I actually used a real map. And it was the only point in the journey where I was absolutely certain of where I was, because everywhere else I went to was entirely confusing, because I would go to Paris and walk along streets which had Algerian names. I'd go to Algiers and I'd be walking down Shakespeare Road. I'd be in Marseille, you know, I'd find myself on a street called the Rue d'Alger in Marseille. So I had this sense always of being in more than one place. But Manchester, I was absolutely clear of where I was. What was interesting about that picture was that then we discovered with Joe and Ed that all the streets around where I'd stuck the picture, quite a few of those streets were places I would go to next. So the street directly beneath the photograph is called Dover Street. And I went to Dover to go to Calais.
So on your journey, did you come across some really interesting characters?
Characters? Yes, most certainly. I mean, the one character who really sticks out for me and was invaluable, because I don't speak French. I speak minimal French. I certainly don't speak Arabic. And even if you did speak those two languages, they wouldn't be much use to you in Algiers, because they speak a sort of street language. So I kept having to be helped by people, which was great, who either translated for me or asked for permission for me to photograph certain things. And one person who was invaluable in Algiers was an Algerian photographer whose full-time job is actually as a geologist for the major oil company in Algeria, a guy called Reda Sami Zazoun. He was a brilliant character in all kinds of respects. He was very amusing, but he was also very, very clever in the way that he knew, because in Algeria it's very, very difficult to photograph. And I had to do it almost secretly using either an iPhone or a small hidden camera, or we'd have to ask permission from the thousands of policemen who were on every street corner. But Redo had this sixth sense where he knew, he's Berber, so he's very pale-skinned and fair-haired, he knew exactly which language to use with the policemen to get on their good side. So with some of them he'd speak in very formal Egyptian Arabic, in others he'd speak in street Arabic, with others he'd speak in French. And he always got his way. I mean, it was uncanny. So he'd say, here is this professor from England who is studying the architecture of our country. And we would be standing in front of a ruined building. Basically, there was nothing there. So, but he'd spin this tale. And then we'd be escorted by the policeman who would then shake my hand and say, I'm honored to assist you in your researches. Before doing this, Red would spray his mouth with a mouth spray because he likes his Johnny Walker. And it doesn't go down well with the police. In fact, Redda's office in Algiers was the bar of the Hotel Suisse Alger, which is a nice old hotel in the centre of Algiers where I was staying, situated between two mosques, one on either side, where you get a group of dodgy businessmen, the occasional spy, the occasional mercenary, all drinking heavily in this bar. And then at some point in the evening, you would hear the two cries of the muezzins, the call to prayer from each mosque, and everybody would stand up in the bar and go, cheers.
That's a great story. how did these connections with strangers, with new people, inspire work? And how does the relationship you had with people online, sending these postcards, inspire the work that you created and what we see in the gallery today?
Yeah, I mean, the work and my journey was shaped by the people I met in terms of the artists I met. So the first person I met in London was actually Zineb Sadira, who is in the show. And I asked her the question I asked everybody I met on the journey, you know, what is a journey? And she said, well, a journey is basically you get on the tube, you get out at the next stop. That's a journey, as much of a journey as crossing the Sahara. So that was the first picture I did. And it worked like that. I would talk to somebody, they would say something, and I'd go out and take a picture. So I got on the tube at Tottenham Court Road, got out at Arsenal, which is right next to the part of London called Little Algiers. It's a very small community of Algerian cafes and shops. Took a picture, one of the first pictures of veiled women I took. There were several of those pictures in England, France and Algeria of a woman going around the corner, which is in the show, in the tube. I think it's on the cover of Corner House's programme this month. So it had a very, very direct impact on my journey. The same in Paris. The person I met in Paris was Sophie Albaz, who is also in the show. I think she was a war photographer at some stage in her life, and that's the attitude she has to life. So she took me on the back of her Vespa through Paris. I thought that's where the journey would end, with a very brief obituary of my curtailed journey. And she drove, looking at me in the face, I was sitting in the back, and describing what we were passing by on the streets of Paris. So that was the only time I travelled on Vespa, and the last time I travelled on Vespa during this journey. I could go on about the people I met, and I met several of the artists in the show on my journey. But you mentioned, at the same time I was keeping a blog called The Cardographer, we called it. And also I was posting stuff, which isn't in the show, about the journey, and people were responding to that and making suggestions, making comments, and so I was getting that feedback. At the same time, I was sending physical postcards, either with my iPhone, it's possible to actually send physical postcards, some of which are in the show, or actual postcards I would modify or write on. But I'd also be receiving postcards. So the blog was a way of keeping together a lot of digitally produced material, but also physical artifacts we were able to include in that. So it was, throughout the whole journey, it was a series of dialogues taking place between the three countries, because it was about the north and the south to a certain extent. There were people, there was one photographer based in the northeast here, Brenda Burrell, who sent me quite a few postcards. When she would go on a walk, let's say through Cumbria, she'd say, I'm in the north as well, and I would be in some very different landscape. But it was nice having those dialogues going on. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, John, for answering our questions today. So could you just tell everyone where we can see the blog?
If you go to the Corner House website, there are links. But also, I've set up a website for the North to North project, which has links to the blog and to other projects I'm working on. And the address of that is northtonorth.weebly.com.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
It's time for our mini What's On Guide to Corner House and Beyond. Now, we did a special public choice Colin Firth's best recently. Basically, we asked you to nominate your favourite Colin Firth film in honour of his various awards, Oscars, and just what a fine actor he is. We had a really good response, and the film that won is A Single Man. This is an amazing film. The fashion designer turned director Tom Ford does a great job, and I'm sure you'll want to catch it again if you've already seen it, or if you haven't seen it, I really can't recommend it enough. And that's going to be on Friday the 29th of April at 4 o'clock. We have a new strand to our film programme called Play It Again, and this is the moment when staff and audiences get to request something recent to come back. So it has to be a new film. It's not about classics necessarily, although they may become classics in their time. This is about the films that you were just a little bit too busy to catch, or perhaps you've seen it and you want everyone else to come back and see it because you feel that not enough people saw it the first time round. Andy was the first person to nominate a Play It Again film, and he chose Of Gods and Men. Andy, tell us why.
Well, I was speaking to a lot of people after Of Gods and Men were on, and I was banging on about it to anyone who'd listen about how great a film it was. A group of monks in Algeria have to decide whether or not to leave their monastery as there's an encroaching Islamic radicals coming to threaten them. And I was saying to people, you know, you've got to go and see it, you've got to go and see it. And it seemed to go, I think, before a lot of people had the chance to see it. So for me, Of Gods and Men seemed the perfect choice for Play It Again, because I know there's a lot of people I've spoken to who really wished they'd seen it when it was on, and now they've got the chance.
Okay, and it's on a few times. The first time it's on is Wednesday the 20th of April at 1:20. And check our website for the other dates and times. Now, do please send us in your suggestions, but note, you must say why. So it's not just saying this film, you must say why you think it should be played again. You can email those in to playitagain@cornerhouse.org. Okay, my final thing is not really a what's on strictly, but I just wanted to draw people's attention to an international art incident that happened last week, and that's about the Middle East. I went recently to the Sharjah Biennial, and I put a blog up about that, so I know some of you've read about that, and I highlighted a piece of work by an artist called Mustafa Benfadil. It was an amazing piece of work where he took a football match. It was a big, large installation, sort of full-scale football pitch. There's a lot of depth and history behind this piece. It's not just about a kind of spectacle. It actually refers to the war in Algeria in the 90s, and there's various slogans printed on the back of the football shirts that respond to some of the atrocities that happen, and some of the groups, particularly Islamic groups, use these slogans to justify some crimes and rape and things that happen. You know, it's an artwork that needs to be put in context. In the area it was in Sharjah, it's quite near a mosque, and it did cause some public outcry and outrage. And then basically the ruler of Sharjah decided to censor the work, and then he also fired the director of the Sharjah Biennial, Jack Persakian, who's a very well-respected figure in the Middle East and art world and beyond. Also, he then took away the piece of artwork and has censored or taken away several other pieces of the artwork as well. So obviously this is quite a serious incident of censorship. At a time when there's a lot of interest in the Middle East, there's a lot of turmoil, the Biennial was seen as maybe, you know, a quite progressive example of what can be achieved in the Middle East. There is a petition online that you'll find by Googling if you want to sort of say, oh, hang on, this, you know, I'm against censorship, I don't think the director of the Biennial should have been sacked. But also what I'd like to point out is that there's not been a great deal of defending the artwork, and I think there should be a lot of support for the artist here. I think the work had a lot of integrity. I know the artist personally, who's actually here last week for our new cartographies exhibition opening, and I think I just wanted to sort of go on record supporting that piece of work. And hopefully it's one that we'll bring over and see in the UK, maybe even Manchester, sometime soon. Now, every week, one of the team very kindly put forward their recommendation of the week. This can be anything, a gig, a film, an event, anything they find interesting here or elsewhere in Manchester. This week, it comes from our cafe.
You may have noticed there's some changes going on in the downstairs bar here at Corner House. We've just upgraded the decor and the styling to launch our new food operation downstairs. We're going to be doing some really, really lovely salads and sandwiches and some toasted paninis. We're also doing some really, really nice homemade pot noodles, if you like, our version of the humble pot noodle. And also some amazing breakfast muffins. I guess it's our version of the McMuffin. And they're all available by 9:30. All of our food is homemade and it's made fresh that morning. We are also trying to use fully biodegradable packaging, which we think is really important. And yeah, I'd say that anyone that's maybe got an hour for lunch or needs something quick and on the go, you can always pop down and give it a try. We'd also really like to hear from our regular customers, and we'd like to hear from you. I think it's really important for our customers to have a say on what we do, and we're trying to tailor the offering to suit our customers. We're obviously in the process of doing lots of changes. There's some exciting stuff to come.
but I would recommend anyone to give it a try.
Thanks, Ben. And I'd like to just add that I had one of their new sausage and egg muffins today, and it was fantastic. And that brings our weekly fun to a close, I'm afraid, listeners. Don't forget to check out our new exhibition, All Three Floors. Look at the website, www.cornerhouse.org. Check out Twitter, maybe become a fan on Facebook, or look at our blog on Posterous. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Cornerhouse podcast.